everybody, and welcome to the Classical PC Gamer Hour.
The show.
The show.com. No, it's the PC Gamer Show. It's a two-man show this week. We're all so busy that we just couldn't get enough people to join us. But that's okay.
Because we're here with you now.
We're here with you now, and we have a lot to talk about. So get your hellos out of the way. Because we got some shit to dive into. Stuff is happening. Let's talk about the latest news. Is that okay with you?
I don't know. Who are you?
Who am I? I'm trying to find my podcast voice, man. It's taking time. It's taking time, but I'm getting there. we're going to start the show with some news. First off, I want to talk about...
He's James. I'm Bo. Hi.
Oh, that's what you mean. Introduction.
Who are you?
I keep wondering. It's funny you asked that, and my brain went immediately to like the podcast persona I'm developing because it's something I actually think about all the time.
Who are you, man? I'm like, no.
Instead of an actual podcast host who knows how to host. Yeah, I'm James Davenport. I'm associate editor at PC Gamer. This is.
I'm Bo Moore. I'm technology editor here at PC Gamer.
These are the sounds of our voices. So now
we will now use them to speak in your general direction.
Yeah. Let's start it off with some pretty cool news that. I caught this morning. Res Infinite is now out on PC.
That's pretty cool. Has it never been on PC?
I don't think so. Either way, it's never been out in this form, and this is truly the ideal form this game should be in. I'm gonna pull up the news story here, and we won't look at it together. But I just want to say, like, $20. Res Infinite is like a remastered version of the classical music game that. At one point included you could buy a trans vibrator for it.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't wait to see all the DIY USB slot solutions that you guys come up with. But this time, you know, it's got 4K support, double texture quality, a lot of cool graphical options. It's got VR support for the whole thing. And Infinite comes with a new kind of a level. I forget what it's called exactly, but that takes place after the normal campaign. So you get a kind of a glance of what Res would look like if it was designed today. And I've played it in VR on PlayStation VR. This is compatible with Oculus Rift and HTC Vive and probably, I don't know, other headsets that come out. But yeah, it's pretty rad. Did you ever play Res?
I actually didn't ever play it.
Now's the time, man.
I'll have to get it.
Some excellent
now
stuff.
It is on the PC.
It is on the PC. Kind of moving on here. Do you remember this game, Wes? You're not Wes.
I'm not Wes.
You even told me your name at the beginning.
Wes, do you remember this game?
Wes, my imaginary friend. Bo, No Man's Sky.
Wait, what? What? Who's Sky?
No Man's Sky.
Like Arya's Sky?
No, No Man's Sky. No, okay. For no man.
What, I guess that's a game.
Yeah, it happened, you know, I think. Last year was a bit of a. I don't know. It was in the news for a while. I mean, like,
we
I
choose not to speak of it.
We do. I liked the game, even though it kind of. Was considered a failure, at least based on its marketing. It did not, meet sort
it
of.
It had a lot of hype.
Had a lot of hype.
And it met none of that.
Yeah, yeah. It ended up being like a very cool walk around, fly around space and see kind of different colors.
Was it a space exploration game?
It's a space exploration game. Going to continue that genre. I'm going to drive into the ground. But after an ARG that lasted a couple months, it led to the announcement of an update. This is the third free update coming to the game this week for free. It's called Atlas Rises, and it includes, we don't really know exactly what it entails yet, but it's supposed to improve the main storyline of No Man's Sky, which
I believe there like kind of wasn't a lot of.
There wasn't a lot of that to begin with, right? There was, you could find like kind of relics and you would get small snippets of text, and you know, you met some aliens who would allude to things happening in the world, but it wasn't really a major thing, right? It was just kind of flavor for that universe. But I think, I mean, I can't remember exactly who they hired, but I know they hired some new writers, and this must be what they've been working on, or a new writer. So hopefully that's cool. They're also including Portal functionality. So you can, I don't know exactly
like
how it
portal,
works.
Like Valve portal?
If it was a portal gun in that universe, that'd be rad. But no, I guess you can just fast like, travel between two points.
Oh, fast travel, yeah. Warpy type stuff.
All right. It might be included in some the crafting hierarchy in some way, sure. Like some top tier thing. That would be cool. So it's, you know... I've yet to hop in because I've been waiting for these updates and to accumulate so I can go back in and maybe play a more idealized version of this game. But I will be hopping in later because I want to get one of those rovers. I want to build a base and I want to see what kind of story tidbits they got coming. Here's a big one that I hesitate to give a damn about. But Valve, hey, Valve announced a new game. Can you guess what it was? Can you guess what it is?
Is it
let your imagination run
something
free?
Something three? No, it's not. It's not at all.
It's not.
It's a card game.
Yeah, at the International just last evening, Valve announced not just any card game.
It's a Dota card game.
It's a fucking Dota card game, of course.
So I haven't played any Dota, so I don't know like any of the Dota characters.
Yeah.
I don't know that universe at all. So is it Dota specific or is it like Valve universe?
We don't really know
anything about it.
And that's why I think I guarantee I'll never really get into this game. Knock on wood, but. That's what's interesting about it. It's Dota themed. It's called Artifact. All we know is there's a short teaser and that shows almost nothing, like a logo, and that it's coming in 2018 sometime. But what's interesting, right, is Valve's existing like Steam marketplace infrastructure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like so Valve is a company that excels, if you will, at marketplace trading. I don't know if you've heard about these things, they're called hats.
Yes, I have so many fucking hats.
And you can like trade hats, apparently. This is a thing. But that's pretty interesting. It has pretty interesting implications for the digital card game space because up until now, pretty much all of the digital card games are just collectible card games.
Yes.
They're not actually trading card games like your obviously traditional physical card game. Such as, you know, Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or whatever. And so, yeah, like to bring that into the digital space where instead of just collecting your cards, if they do indeed, again, like we don't have any confirmation that this is actually what's going to happen, but if they do allow card trading, it has some pretty interesting implications for the digital card game space. I don't think that like the other games will follow suit. Probably not, but
yeah, it'd be kind of hard to, you know, toss in at this point in their development.
But it might kind of mix things up in an interesting way.
Yeah, I mean,
like at the end of the day, it all comes down to like whether or not the game is fun,
exactly.
Like if it's a well balanced, interesting to play, well designed card game.
Yes.
Like, and the existence of card trading will not make it a good game.
No.
If it is a game that is on par with Hearthstone or Elder Scrolls Legends or the other, you know, tier one collectible digital card games, it's a potential differentiator that could make it kind of stand out.
I'm hoping they really, well, I mean, if they use it, it will be, I think it will suffer the same problems that the Steam Marketplace kind of does already, where for whatever reason, a certain item might be inflated in price to a horrific degree. There's like some crazy, crazy prices on Counter-Strike gun skins there. And there's even an aftermarket that trades the keys, which you use to unlock boxes, as like a kind of a marker of currency that is used outside of the Steam Marketplace to trade at higher prices. Cause I think there's like a cap at like $400, $500 at the moment. So I'm excited, simultaneously excited and like horrified to see if they take that kind of approach, which would be weird if they didn't. Right.
I feel like it's all but confirmed. Basically.
Yeah,
like that's what makes sense. But again, total speculation like has not been confirmed at all.
Right.
I played a lot of Magic growing up, and there definitely were cases where the flavor of the month deck, the cards that were good in those cost more if you wanted to buy them outright. And then if there were especially good cards that were like falling into every single deck, even if they were like a common or an uncommon, they would be like, there would be commons that were worth like $5 or $10 just because they were so like everybody wanted four of them for every single deck. And then, you know, there would be rares that were worth $20, $40, $60 a piece. So yeah, it could create a pretty interesting marketplace.
At the very least, I'm excited to sort of, I never got into Magic, but I was sort of like ancillary to the scene in my Pokemon days.
I played a lot of Pokemon. Yeah.
And there was always I love the feeling of wandering into some sort of like strip mall and finding the card shop or the weird antique shop that had a Pokemon Magic card section, and with rare cards at a high price behind a glass case.
Yep.
And I don't know, there might be something to that allowing these cards to be traded and sold on a marketplace can tap into. And that's exciting to me in a very like maybe nostalgic, superficial, pointless way. But we'll see how it goes. We know almost nothing.
Yeah.
So the thing
that I'm sort of wondering about is if they go for the trading route, the way that like collectible or digital card games have gotten around not trading is they allow crafting. You know, you disenchant your unwanted cards and you use that dust or whatever the currency is to craft the cards that you want. At least that's how it is in Hearthstone. And whereas, like, obviously that's not something you can do in real life. I guess the equivalent of that in real life is like taking your unwanted cards, selling them to the store, and then purchasing the card that you want. And so in that regard, it will be interesting if they have crafting in addition to trading, or if they go purely for a trading economy, if it is indeed, obviously, the trading is the route they go, or if those two will kind of exist hand in hand. Because, like, I've never really felt the need to trade in Hearthstone, because if there's a specific card that I want, I can just go craft it.
Right.
Like, it may take some time investment, or, you know, I might have to dust some of my other good cards, but that's functionally the same thing. I'm taking the cards that I have and trading them in for a different card. So yeah, I don't know if those two economies can kind of live side by side, or if they'll opt for one or the other.
It makes you wonder how that'll shake out too, because what will determine value? Will it be utility? Like, this specific semi-rare card is extremely useful and harder to come across the normal, or will it be some, you know, arbitrary, like, we have a cool effect on this card and that we only released it during this period of time? And how they kind of make sure that, again, we don't even know if this is happening, but we're getting excited.
Wild speculation.
But I hope they try, because it seems like, I don't know, it seems like something, if anyone could pull off, would be you know, Valve, because they have the experience at this point. Anyway, we'll quit talking about cards for now, and talk about what we've been playing. And Bo, have you been playing any card games lately?
Not really. I mean, Hearthstone is the closest thing I've come to playing anything in the card space, and I haven't really been playing that lately because we're ramping up to the expansion comes out tomorrow,
Knights of the Frozen Throne.
It's the like Death Knight themed expansion pack, the Lich King, all of these familiar faces from
characters you know and love
from the Warcraft universe. And the Death Knights are coming. Some of them are pretty cool. We had an article go up, I think, this morning from our resident Hearthstone expert, kind of analyzing the power levels of the various Death Knights, the Death Knight heroes, which when you play them, they replace your hero. Then you have like an instant effect. You gain some armor and it replaces your hero power with a newer, more powerful hero power. And the interesting thing is like the Death Knight heroes that have kind of the most boring effects tend to be the most powerful ones, because like they're boring in the sense that it just does a thing, but that thing is good. Whereas the exciting hero powers that like does some flashy effect, it's like, that's a really cool effect if you can like make it work, but they're like, because it's not like a always good type situation. They're much more situational and less overall powerful. So yeah.
Cool. What have you actually been playing though, besides thinking about Hearthstone?
Well, there's this little game.
Oh God.
It's called Overwatch.
Oh, hey. Hey guys.
Guess what? There's like a really good reason why I'm playing it a lot right now.
Oh, yeah.
And that's because it's summertime and the summer games are happening.
Okay. Well, yeah. So the summer games launched last year during Overwatch's first year. And can you give us a brief history of the summer games?
Yeah.
And kind of what they entail.
So last year, Overwatch itself, I don't remember the exact launch day, but I want to say it was like April or so. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was just the game and there was no special seasonal anything. And then around summertime, the Olympics were happening in Rio, I believe it was, in 2016. And so Overwatch did an Olympic-themed seasonal event. It was the first of the seasonal events, which has now gone on to have the Halloween Terror event, mm-hmm. the Christmas holiday event. There was the Lunar New Year event shortly after that, followed by the Overwatch Uprising, which was not really tied to anything real world, but it was mm-hmm. just like a point in Overwatch's history. Has there been one since then?
Did you mention the New Year, Chinese New Year?
Yeah, there was the Lunar New Year, Chinese New Year. And then I might be missing one between then and now. And so now the year has rolled around and we weren't really sure, like, was Overwatch going to revisit the summer games? Mm-hmm. Because obviously it is not the Olympics this year, but will there be an Olympic theme event? It turns out, yes.
Cool.
The Overwatch Summer Games has returned. They have re-unlocked the Summer Games skins from last year. So those skins that you previously only were able to get during the event window, mm-hmm. you have a chance to get them again. The ones from last year are discounted to the normal skin price of just like what a regular skin is. So like
in-game gold.
The in-game in-game gold that you can unlock skins for.
You're not buying these outright.
No, still loot box based. In-game gold. For one, they are available in the Summer Games loot boxes, and then if you want to purchase them with in-game currency, the last year's skins are like 1,000 gold for a legendary, mm-hmm. whereas the normal price for event skins is 3,000.
Cool.
So this year's skins, the legendaries are 3,000. Mm. Last year's legendaries are 1,000. But really all of that, me rambling on about the loot box economy, really the only thing that matters is that this year's skins are fucking rad.
They are so good. They are so good.
And most importantly, of all of them, so I'll just say this. There were seven skins this time around. They were all legendaries. And it's time to look at the greatest skin ever made of all time.
Give me a sec while I
We're going to get there.
And transition.
Boom.
Look at this guy.
Dad 76. The name of the skin is actually Grillmaster 76, which is also an outstanding name.
Right.
But like, just look at these details. Like top to bottom, he's the dad. He's got his goofy wraparound sunglasses. He's got his grenades or beers.
Are they soda or beers? They're spiritually beers.
It's dad juice. His gun has wood paneling. I hadn't even noticed that until just now.
Oh my God.
The gun has wood paneling. Keep going. Scroll it a little bit. His gun also looks like a flamethrower because he's like the grill master.
Right, it's
the assault rifle because he's salting up the meat.
Do you get it?
You damn well better. Back in my day, we'd have this meat cooked by now.
Oh my God. And these fucking tongs.
He's got tongs and a grill brush hanging from his thing. And then in true dad fashion. Here, fashion.
Let me get the other picture up so I can.
Oh no, does it not scroll beyond this?
Yeah, it's just a tiny ass one.
So we gotta get the other picture up.
We will
in here.
Get the other picture up. I can't believe this shit.
It's so good.
I think it's down here. Here we go.
Oh yeah.
And zoom in there. And
I might add that on. Look at that apron. Raise the stakes. But he's wearing cargo shorts.
Cargo shorts.
And perhaps the most dadly thing of all, socks with sandals.
Oh my God. This is maybe the best skin I've ever seen in any.
It's so I'm super, super excited that they like so last year's Summer Games event.
Yeah.
It was like all the skins were sports themed and like nationality themed, you know, it was the very like worldly, global, represent your country type thing. Whereas this time around, there is like one or two still sports themed ones.
Right.
The Reaper skin is like a BMX / motorcycle like biker outfit. Whereas the Junkrat one, yeah, you can kind of scroll us through all of these. All
right, let's get going.
Get your transitions going. Yeah, so we've got, you know, Reaper with his kind of BMX.
What's Reaper doing? It's hot as hell out there.
I know. Doesn't he know that it's hot in summer?
It is still pretty cool.
To be fair, that's probably what Reaper would wear to a barbecue.
That's like, absolutely what he would wear.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
So we got that. And then Sombra is more of the, I don't really know what she's doing. But so what I was trying to say, though, is like you've got a handful of sports themed ones.
Yes.
But then they've also like really embraced the just like, sun's out, guns out.
The rest are Jimmy
summertime
Buffett.
Summertime fun.
Jimmy Buffett
theme. We've got, yeah. Oh, my favorite detail of the McCree skin here is his gun is a desert seagull.
Oh, my God. What does SAMF stand for?
I'm thinking it's summer ass motherfucker, I guess.
Is this like a lore bomb?
Well, because the original one is BAMF, which we all know what that stands for. So it's either... It's got to be summer.
Someone do the heavy lifting, investigate.
Yeah, like let us know.
Hack Blizzard and tell us.
Of course, our man, Dad76.
Okay, and it's my impression, like loosely paying attention, that a lot of, maybe not all of them, but a lot of Overwatch skins sort of are at least like canon or ancillary to canon, or at least like they're not 100% arbitrary. Like they say something about the character.
Yeah, they usually do. Usually if they have some sort of nationality related thing, it'll be themed to what the character's like character bio. They try not to give like, you know, a character that has history here, skin of this other nationality or something. So like Mercy here, she is Swedish, I believe, or Swiss.
Okay.
I think. Which this one, I mean, that's more of like a Greek. Obviously, it's the Athena.
Yeah.
You know, Greek
torch bearing.
This is very Olympic themed.
Yes.
Which has less to do with the nationality and more to do with being a Grecian princess.
There you go.
But yeah, and then, you know, Widow is just in a bikini at the beach.
Of course.
Rocking it.
Is her tattoo visible in other skins?
I don't think so.
I wonder what that
says. It could be.
It's a pretty rad tat.
Yeah, well, we may have to investigate, see what that is. And here we've got, you know, Junkrat.
That's great.
Playing something for Australia.
Oi, oi, oi. Yeah, whatever sport this is. And here's just kind of
he's playing cricket, I guess.
Cricket. He's got a cricket leg.
It's a cricket bat.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. So here's the skins in skin mode.
These are really great. I like the towel.
Yeah. This is something that we saw in the Heroes of the Storm summer event a couple weeks or a month or so ago. That was just like they really went all in on just like goofy, fun, silly skins. Like previously the all-time greatest skin ever made was Tychus in a Speedo. This has now been bested only by Dad76.
Oh, that's such great stuff. As far as like the everything else surrounding the summer event, I kind of maybe missed glossed over, but are we getting what's it called?
Lucille Ball.
I always want to say Lucille Ball.
Lucille Ball,
which is not Lucille Ball. It's a person.
Indeed. But yes, we are getting Lucille Ball back. We are getting a second stadium to play Lucille Ball in. So there's now both the Rio and there is a Sydney stadium, I believe.
Okay.
In addition to that, they made a few little tweaks to Lucille Ball. They made it so that when you boop, you can't boop knock back other players. Mm-hmm. So basically there was a strategy that involved like just going up and knocking the goalie out of the way, which kind of was
I want to know all about the Lucio Ball meta.
And they swapped up the Lucia's ult, so it no longer, previously I think it like sucked the ball towards you sort of. Mm-hmm. It like drew it in a big way, whereas now it just kind of gives you like a super boop and you're moving faster and all sorts of stuff.
Cool.
But yeah, and in addition to that, during the Summer Games event, which runs August 8th through 29th, I believe, mm-hmm. They're running a little mini competitive season for Lucio Ball. So you can actually play, do placement matches, earn competitive points. And if you like complete your placements, and you'll earn the competitive Lucio Ball spray and even a special spray if you place into the top 500.
Right on. And how long is this going for now?
8th through the 29th, I believe, are the dates.
8th through the 29th.
Yeah, so it's a three-week season.
It's cool. I'm excited about the idea of, I don't know, Overwatch over time finding a rhythm, an annual rhythm, and sort of turning these events, I don't know, watching these events change over time.
Yeah.
And sort of people anticipating and getting ready for them. And maybe a couple of years from now, you know, the summer event is a few game modes, or it's like, you know, sponsored or accompanied by several tournaments or some big mm-hmm. event, or I don't know. It's just, it's cool to see. It's rare for games to get into, to have such a big following and then also, sort of have this beat they can develop,
yeah,
and identity they can kind of carve out over time, literally in time, like over the course of a calendar year. And I don't know, it's in the same way we get excited for, I don't know, any holiday. I like the idea of the community as a whole like coming together and just kind of
being excited for it. I really like that idea of the evolution of these events,
because yeah.
It's like you sort of know what's coming, but you also know that you're going to get something new. And I like that Blizzard didn't feel like they needed to be strictly beholden to the Olympic theme. And, you know, they use that as a jumping off point, but also like sitting out grilling kind of doesn't have anything to do with the Olympics.
It does so, not.
Yeah, it's I like what they did.
Cool. Right on. Play anything else, Bo?
That's pretty much it.
We kind of nothing else really. You've been hitting that Overwatch scene hard. Well, I guess I'll talk about what I've been playing. And well, can you guess one of the games? We're both predictable at this point.
Is it Dark Souls?
It's Dark Souls. I've been playing more Dark Souls 2. Let's see. I finished didn't finish the final DLC, Crown of the Ivory King, but I got to the final boss, and now I'm throwing myself against that. So for all of you who just care so deeply about my revisited Dark Souls 2, just, you know, can't wait to hear what I've done next. It's going well. I have a cool sword. Ask me about my sword. I also have been playing a game called Hellblade. And
Hellblade.
When I ask people about Hellblade, honestly, it's got an awful name. It's Hellblade : Senua's Sacrifice, technically. But when
I kept reading that as like Senua's sacrifice, like sensual sacrifice.
It's I think it's a pretty awful.
It's not a great name.
Name overall, yeah. It's not very descriptive. And when I think of a game called Hellblade, I think of, did I press play? Yeah, I think of like something gritty and metal, and like it's got blood and guts, and
what I would expect out of
yeah, to be fair, Hellblade. It comes off as a well, let me describe it. It's a third person story driven action adventure game, which might give you the impression it's like a God of War or a, you know, you're moving through levels and you're fighting enemies and you're upgrading your powers and yada, yada, yada. But Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice is a much more focused, different thing than what you would expect. It's a story game first and foremost. And you kind of get to understand its priorities within the first 5 minutes of the game, where you're on this boat and you're in this really cool credit sequence, rowing upriver while voices are whispering in your ear, and the credits kind of splay out in really cool ways along the riverside. And the first thing you see is like mental health or psychology consultant and historical consultant. So this is a game that is trying to be true to what it's like to have a mental illness, a serious mental illness, and to be sort of embedded in maybe not like the true history of, you know, of the, like, I think it's Scandinavia, up way up north there. But at least embedded sort of in, like, you know, historical events that stay true to the mythology and sort of way of life, and at least some of the you know, the visual trappings of these cultures and so on. But from there, it's a very, you would almost call it a space explorer, or if you haven't been listening to the show, a walking simulator, because you do a lot of walking forward. It's a very narrow path. It's very, very guided. And you do, I mean, there's combat sequences, but they're very discreet and sort of focused and
I was expecting a lot from the way it was built and everything. I was expecting a lot more like hack and slashiness, Devil May Cry or something along that regard.
You would think so, because Ninja Theory did put out DMC Devil May Cry, the last entry in that series, which was excellent. Before that,
obviously, like
Heavenly Sword,
Ninja Gaiden and stuff like that.
They have a history in these kind of games. And you can tell because the combat sequences are rare, but they are very, very good. They feel great. But more to like sort of what the game is really about is Senua is the character you play. And she is, the narrative doesn't become super clear until like later on. But you are, there's no very blatant tutorial, even when you get into your first combat sequence. Instead, you have these voices like whispering into your, like multiple, like four or five, six, maybe voices at once whispering into your headphones. And you should wear headphones if you play this game, because the audio direction is just excellent. And they won't ever outright tell you what to do. Sometimes they will even question what you're doing. It's almost like the internal monologue of a player or something like, I'm scared. Should I be doing this? I can't do this. Some of them will say you can do this, some of them, and you sort of grow to learn these voices and like distinguish them from one another. And it never feels, it never feels like a parody of like sort of a schizophrenic personality. But it, for necessary reasons, maybe has like a sort of, I don't know, very plain, almost cliche or tropey approach, like, right, voices in your head. It's not exactly how it plays out, but for the sake of the medium. But anyway, they will sort of indirectly tutorialize you and teach you how to do things. There's a focus mechanic where you press the right trigger and you look at something closely, and that can be used not just to, like, observe the environment, which is very detailed. There's a lot to see and sort of parse from, you know, the environmental storytelling. But there are like small puzzles where you'll, to unlock a door, you might have to find a glyph. Well, the door will have a glyph on it, and you'll stare at the glyph and sort of, you ever done the thing where you stare at a light and then, or like a black shape and then you stare at a white wall and you can see the shape imprinted? It sort of uses that idea, right? So you're staring at the shape and then you sort of see it on palely imprinted on your vision, and then you find like trees that are felled or a shadow on the ground that has a similar shape, and by matching those shapes you then can unlock the door. It's very kind of video gamey, but also accompanied by almost a constant stream of consciousness from the voices in your head. Some of them are more like plain,
so you've got that combination to sort of make it feel like it obviously has to be gamey in some way.
In some ways.
But like,
and those things might stand out more because it's so a gorgeous and amazing looking game. And be focused on like telling a story rather than being like a constantly satisfying, like leveling up and there's no health bar. And, you know, there's nothing like that. Just trying to be as subtle and I hate using the word cinematic, but just like, immersive, I suppose, or, as possible.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You, and as you go through, I think what stands out to me the most is just the treatment of the character. It's a very focused, intensely sad story. It can be sort of hard to take seriously. Like, I don't know, the Norse mythology always comes off as a bit ham-fisted when it's represented in like modern media to me. Maybe it's because I only associate it with like Thor and like popular depictions of the shit. But I think, and I've yet to finish it. I'm probably about 4 hours in, $30. I think the camera work, the amazing look the game has, it very rarely cuts the camera. You'll either like flow from a cutscene directly into behind the shoulder camera and so on and so forth, and you'll weave in and out of memories, you'll weave in and out of like these very surreal like shadowy horror moments, and you're doing something different in almost every area. So even if it's not very complex or hard to get through, I think it's one of the most unique story-driven games I've ever played, like by a long shot. And if you love story-driven games, I think you should really check it out at some point. Another thing. There is. I'm not going to say because I can't. I can't say this authoritatively, but it has a permadeath mechanic, or at least the suggestion of one. And it was
if you die or if you die too much, something happens.
There's like this rot, this curse.
We don't want to spoil anything.
No. Like, I'm not going to say like
nothing that.
But it lends the game a very. It's never very difficult, so I don't think like even if you do die a lot, you have too much to worry about. But it lends the encounters a little more tension, and even just like when you're walking through an environment that is otherwise supposed to be like you would know is harmless. I think it really helps kind of like give it more weight.
Just ratchets up the tension.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't sit here and like worry that you're going to lose progress because if you played a game before, an action adventure game, and you have reflexes, you probably have nothing to worry about. But it's a cool, even no matter how that kind of thing pans out, I am avoiding like reading about it. I think it's a very good sort of directorial like touch to create tension. So anyway, Hellblade, go play Hellblade.
Sounds cool.
Go do it. Anyway, so that's what I've been playing, Dark Souls and Hellblade. Not really too much going on, but since we're a bit short staffed right now, I do want to do a bit of a longer Q&A.
Cool.
If that's cool.
Let's do it.
So get your questions going. Tag at PC Gamer in the Twitch chat. If you're in our Discord, I think people were dropping questions in the Ask PC Gamer channel. If you don't know what I'm talking about when I say our Discord, we have a PC Gamer club.
It's a thing.
What's this all about? What's this club? What's this exclusive radical club you can join?
Join the PC Gamer club.
The PC Gamer smoking club.
We Except sit around we a bathrobe. Don't smoke, kids. Smoking's bad for
smoking's
you.
Smoking's bad.
You can join the PC Gamer Club. You can join us in our exclusive Discord channel, Discord server. It has many channels.
Yes.
One of them is about Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Every Sunday we kind of get in there and just like, dragons.
You get all sorts of cool stuff. Of course, an ad-free experience on our site.
Yep.
You'll get some free game keys coming at you on a fairly regular basis. Mm-hmm. When you sign up immediately, you get a free digital book. It is the ultimate RPG handbook curated and written by us, PC Gamer. Mm-hmm. And of course, a digital magazine subscription to PC Gamer itself.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff in there that you won't see on the site, like, ever. So I think, don't think that we're just, you know, we're posting every article in both places, and that's how we create these things. There's a whole team putting this stuff together. It's their full-time job, and it's... Man, some really good stuff in there. So,
yeah.
Also, you forgot the most important
perhaps
one.
Nay, definitely the most important thing that you get Tub Geralt.
You get Tub in Geralt.
4K glory for your wallpaper phone. You could probably blow him up and do one of those fat heads on your wall. If anybody does that, I want to see a picture of
it. Someone get a fathead Tub Geralt going now.
Yeah, holy that needs shit. To happen.
So
the fattest of heads.
Again, tag us in the Twitch chat at PC Gamer with any question you have about PC gaming, videos, P's, C's.
And G's.
G's. We got some G's, too.
We do.
I did collect a few earlier from our Discord chat, so I'll get to those first while you guys start spitting those questions out. And I'll post a link to our club membership in the chat as well. But first up, Draconis, Hasmuffins, asks, why do the hardcore games have to involve hell, demons, or ghosts? And he lists Dark Souls, Bloodborne, and that new Hellblade game as examples.
The one we were just talking about.
The one we were just talking about.
Yeah. This is actually a really good point, and it's a good question, because that, like, gothic hell aesthetic does nothing for me. And I think that is one of the big reasons why I haven't played Dark Souls and, like, have no real desire to.
Right.
Like, the idea of this, like, ultra-hardcore combat based, reaction based gameplay, like, that really appeals to me, but just like this gothic hell must fight demons, etc. I just, like,
never were a Castlevania guy, anything
not
like
really
that?
No. I'm much more of a sci-fi, whether it's near or far future, like, that's the aesthetic that much more appeals to me. So, like, I didn't end up getting around to playing it, but I have heard there was a Souls like a couple months ago that was like it was like you were piloting robot type things.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. What was that game called?
Chat will know. I should know this. But yeah, that was made by the Lords of Fallen. Surge.
The Surge. Yeah. So, like, that, I should play The Surge and, you know, give it a shot to see if I do indeed like that genre.
Yeah. I can't really speak to why, like, hardcore is such a... I think those games might stand out as being hardcore because they are deliberately dark. And I think it's important to separate, like, something like Dark Souls, or at least, like, distinguish something like Dark Souls from the super, like, fuck yeah, hell, skulls, bats and shit games. Because Dark Souls, oh my God.
Because, like, there are other games that do hell and demons and stuff that aren't the hardcore.
And this is me, like... tightening my cap and belt and, like, well, actually, Dark Souls-ing, like, Dark Souls is much more, almost everything in at least, like, the first game has meaning. It's never like, here's a demon just because. It might, like, invoke a lot of that kind of imagery for a purpose, but it's all tied into mythology and it all, like, even, like, the way a demon looks or, like, how many arms it has or the statuary on the wall in the room you find him in is important and meaningful. And so I don't know what this has to do with the original question other than, like, it might just be a personal preference when it comes down to it. Some people like that stuff.
It's like those games were, a lot of them were made by the same team or something. And they just like doing that.
And I want to say, like, maybe Quake or that kind of, like, early industrial, like, metal kind of aesthetic that kind of established a lot of popular PC games has been hard to let go, or at least, like, it served to inspire a lot of PC games that came down the pipe. So I don't know. Let's see here. I got one from Butts, also known as, oh my God, I forgot your actual original name, DJ something.
DJ Bruce, is that right?
DJ Bruce.
DJ Butts.
I think
it's DJ Butts. Bruce. It's just Butts now.
DJ Bruce. That's exactly it. Yeah, I just haven't seen it in a long time. We just had surgery. Hope you get well. Feel better. Good games to play in bed after recovering from an operation. Huh?
That's a good question.
What kind of games? I took that as, what kind of games can you play? Basically a mobile while in pain or sick or whatever it is? What's your kind of go-to for that kind of situation?
What's my go-to in that situation? Well, so for one, I'm assuming that means you like don't have access. If you're bedridden, you probably won't be able to be like sitting up at a desk. Mm-hmm. So we actually recently updated our list to like the best laptop and low spec games. So if you have like an Ultrabook or a laptop of some kind, there's a lot of games on that list. Some favorites on there of mine. FTL is really great. Mm. And I have sunk hours and hours and hours into FTL.
Love it.
You can kind of just keep playing it a whole lot. It's
so good.
Yeah, check out that list. Other games, you know, I would say anything that is both time consuming and, but like maybe not Twitch based or something. So
yeah,
you know, something like Civilization.
Oh, maybe even Civ like, would be perfect. Like Civ, you want to pass great. Some time?
XCOM. Definitely sink some time into. Yeah.
If you're trying to use it as a like a bucket list time, if you're like, well, I'm never going to play these games otherwise, I would say dip into some classic adventure games or maybe build your way to towards the modern adventure game Renaissance, which is it's not a Renaissance. But, you know, adventure games good. Just pointing and clicking and laughing and reading.
Hoping and wishing.
I would say no RTSs. Stay away from RTSs.
Yeah, anything that involves like a lot of clicking very quickly, I would Uber probably not.
I don't even know an Uber. Remember, what was that show that like popularized Uber Macro? What was that called? You know what I'm talking about?
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Oh, my epic! Oh my god, I don't want to go back to college. Let's move on to Favis. One of our club members asks in our Discord. Aside from the Overwatch guy, oh, this is a good question. Which game character do you wish was your dad? That's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I can let that simmer for a bit.
Who I want is my game dad.
Keep the questions coming, guys. These are great.
Throw them out. We're going to let that one simmer and come back to it.
Game dad. All right. Don't let me forget, Bo. Yeah. We'll let that simmer. We're not going to forget you, Favis. Let's see. X Macho Man X. I think my vision's not great. If you can have any sequel made.
On. We got to get this right. It's X Macho X Man X.
Jesus Christ. X Macho X Man X.
There we go.
If you can have any sequel made, what game would you have a sequel created by, created for, and by what developer?
Hmm.
All these questions, like, I want to plumb the depths of my knowledge and, like, come up with the right answer.
There's some good ones. Okay, what is, I mean, so the easiest way to think about it is like, what franchise do you wish had another
still
game
still going?
I would really love, this is, I mean, not totally PC specific, but I would love another like true Mario RPG, like not a Paper Mario, but like an actual Mario RPG.
What was the one called?
It was just Super Mario RPG.
Was that, really?
Legend of the Seven Stars was the subtitle.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that. Like true, like Square style RPG.
I agree. I think there's room for something like that to exist. Maybe obviously not Mario branded.
Yeah. I mean, really, that just kind of opens it up to like, I would like to see more like traditional Square style RPGs, like traditional JRPG, but maybe not particularly with like a lot of almost all JRPGs have this very, like, for lack of a better word, anime aesthetic.
Yeah, I was gonna say they do have, I know Square has been at least experimenting with some of that, because there was I am Setsuna, is that what it's called?
I think so.
Was sort of their first attempt, major attempt to sort of make a smaller budget game that, you know, was for people looking for another like classic JRPG. Mm-hmm. I think there's room for like more, and I wish more RPGs would do this overall. I'm not a big South Park fan, but I liked that game, if only because I like lighthearted RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
They can be challenging and they can be deep. But I want to, like you, I wish there was some more RPGs in the PC. Maybe I'm totally oblivious, so help us out if you know any, that are
just not so self-serious, like, gotta save the world, you know, super you're the chosen one
exactly.
type thing, because those tropes have been played out like
mined and mined.
Decades ago.
There, I know there's a what's it called? Is it called Knuckle Sandwich? Have you been paying attention to Knuckle Sandwich? Mm-hmm. I'll post a link in chat, but that one I'm keeping my eye on. Knuckle Sandwich. It's an upcoming RPG with a lovely, lovely look. I know Tom was really excited about it before he moved on. But it's got echoes of Earthbound.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say it has a very kind of Earthbound-y aesthetic. And, you know, like, on the point of Earthbound, like, Undertale was an outstanding game. Yeah. And it was, like, very, very Earthbound-inspired. And in the same way, like, wasn't super self-serious. It was, you know, in a lot of ways a satire and a parody of these type games. Mm-hmm. But its comedy really succeeded in a big way. So I think that that could be really cool.
My answer is boring. I just want more. I want more Dark Souls games, but I think I would hate it if there was more Dark Souls games, but I want more. It's a thing I'm working through. Don't judge me. There's a better answer I have somewhere. And that's, I want another Beast Wars game. And I know what that sounds like. That's insane. There was a Beast Wars game that came out in like 2000 and it was awful, but it's one of the earliest memories I have of PC gaming. And I think I just like have this, well, I was never big Transformers, like cars, robots, blah, boring. Give me a guy who can turn into a cheetah and like, you know, or a wasp or fucking Silverbolt, who's like half wolf, half eagle, crazy Fusors. Who loves the Fusors there?
Oh, the Fusors.
Good man. Shit. It was a more exciting universe to me. And if I'm going to revive a series on PC, I'm going to go for a deep cut like that. Give me, I'm still waiting for a Transformers game that really makes transforming feel like an important utility rather than just like a,
well, you're in fight mode and you're in transport mode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe open world survival game. Give me Ark Beast Wars Evolved.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Nice.
I don't know how I feel about that sentence now. Yeah, we'll see. Got a lot of questions queued up here. So I'm going to prioritize Twitch subscribers and clubbers first, so don't take it personal, but Max Ursa asks, any of you folks coming over to the UK for the Frontier Expo, or is it just the UK crew covering it? I ask as I'll be there. No one in the US, as far as I know.
Not that I'm aware of.
We'll probably have someone from the UK there. I can't really, I don't know. I wish I could tell you.
I don't know the daily goings on.
But ask around. I'm sure whoever's there from PC Gamer, if we have anyone going, would be happy to talk to you. Toucan Rider asks, and I don't know how to answer this. What's your idea for a Rick and Morty game? Do you watch Rick and Morty?
I do.
Yeah.
I thought that the Rick and Morty VR simulator was really cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
Like,
it's
cool. You know, that's a fun take on the, in the same vein as like Job Simulator,
yeah,
where it's like a very satirical thing. I mean, obviously with the Rick and Morty universe, you have to go kind of all in on the insanity and the Rick sanity, if you will. Like, how would that play out in an interesting way?
I think
game mechanically,
on the tail of that RPG conversation.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is like an easy answer. I'm not a game designer, so I don't know, but I would love, I think Rick and Morty would lend itself very well to an RPG like with the, that has the same, that makes the same attempt to like make the art style in an engine come across like, mm-hmm, like South Park, because that game looks like South Park.
Yeah.
If they somehow could achieve that with Rick and Morty, and
which I'm sure could be done,
some kind of interstellar RPG adventure where you're moving between crazy worlds. And I mean, that format seems like an easy answer to me.
Yeah. I mean, they already did kind of have the Pocket Morty's,
that's right,
little,
that's
mobile,
right,
game that was, you know, obviously a Pokemon clone. But it was kind of in a big way, like, mm-hmm, a lot more than just a like super, super basic mobile game. Like, it was relatively fleshed out. Like,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah,
it was limited by its small scope. But there's a lot of kind of parody available there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you thought of a dad yet?
I'm still thinking.
I can't. I feel like any answer I give will, I'll regret immediately after the show ends. No dads. No gods. We'll sit on that one a little longer. That beautiful dad egg.
I mean, the answer is obviously like a big daddy from from BioShock.
That's a good one. That's a good one. No, I don't know.
I mean, they're just so friendly and loving. And
it's honestly like it's making it hard to think because I want to answer it correctly. We'll move on. We'll keep sitting on that dad.
Who are like some of your favorite dads games?
Okay.
Let's name a couple dads. There's like the Fallout dad.
Here's the question. Is it existing dads like that are dads in canon or
I don't think
people we want to be dads?
I think you just are picking a character and you want that character to be your dad.
Okay, and you're just brainstorming. So you're bringing up dads.
Yeah, so I'm bringing up dads.
Fallout dad sucks. He's a cool off-screen character until you meet him and he's like, he's a fucking dad. Big daddies. Let's run through is Gordon a dad? I don't think, no, because he's an MIT, like, he's at MIT
I don't think
when he's in the first
dad.
Game. So he's just like a youngster.
There's like the dad from that Mass Effect game that we don't play, that we don't
speak of. Oh, yeah. Andromeda. I don't think he's a very good dad. I think Mass Effect's a good one to hit, though, because there's some characters in there who I'm sure are dads. Rex becomes a really good dad.
Yeah, I think Rex would make a rad dad.
Rex is a great dad.
Oh, you know who I want is fucking Iron Bull from.
He would be a dope dad.
Position. Iron Bull is awesome. Iron Bull is one of my favorite game characters. Like, he's great.
Yeah, no, so many layers to enjoying that character. A, just like how he kind of defies his stature, and B, that he's. Well, the beats in that game that happen, that can happen with him, and as like a romantic partner and like any iteration of that relationship you can have with him. And see, Freddie Prinze Jr. is the fucking voice. Yeah. So
that's my answer.
Iron Bull.
Iron Bull.
I don't know. For me, my dad is Dark Souls. Dark Souls is my dad. That's my answer, Favus. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Let's move on here. We got a bunch of questions to get through and we still have some time. So Twitch names, guys. God, I can't read them. Swagisleyfay69. What do you guys think of Prey? I know it's not new, but I just started playing.
I still haven't played Prey and I really want to.
Yeah.
Like, it's totally the type of game that I like and want to play, and I just haven't stopped playing Overwatch to play it.
Yeah, that's hard to do for you, isn't it?
It really is.
I'm seeing maybe not weirdly, it's sort of the rhythm of when a game releases, it's either proclaimed okay or bad or great. And I think Prey was proclaimed okay, right?
Yeah.
By the majority, like.
Well, actually, like the weird thing about Prey is, and I think we have a sort of long-term story sort of brewing on this general subject, is that Prey actually was mostly positive reviews, it wasn't like universal praise as the greatest everything, but it was pretty highly acclaimed from most places, and yet it did not sell well at all.
Yeah, that I think that's the.
And it just kind of killed the game's momentum and it killed the buzz around it. And so I would say absolutely play Prey. Like, this is a recommendation that I have no qualms making despite having not played the game. It's just like, if you enjoy Dishonored, if you enjoy BioShock, if you enjoy, you know, classic System Shock, like, the classic immersive sim genre, it is absolutely a well representation of that genre.
Yes. So if you're craving one of those games, I think it'll really do it for you. The combat is not amazing to me, and I didn't fall off it because I was not interested in the game. I played like 10 hours of it. I fell off because a lot started happening at once.
Sometimes there are other games that we need to play and we have to move on.
It's hard to, because I hear you can go. I would want to be a completionist with that kind of game because I want to know everything about the place. And I hear there's some cool kind of end game changes to how you interact with other characters. But I would say if it's your kind of jam, there's like no reason to wait unless you're waiting for a sale.
Yeah.
It's like, it's great. Maybe not the best, but hey, I think it's probably better than most of what's out there. JBJ Blaze, thanks for telling me to change my current topic. We are not talking about Overwatch still. Sorry for the psych out. But DJ Bruce says it's always Fashion Watch.
It is.
And that is true. That is true. Apollo Dingo, my arch nemesis. Just kidding. We're pals. But asks, who do you prefer more in the Bathroom Boys PUBG stream, Jules or Crazy Canuck? I feel like CC loses a lot of points with all his absences. It's Crazy Canuck. So if you don't know, Bathroom Boys is sort of our community regular group for PUBG, Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, and headed up by Jules most of the time, and Crazy Canuck and some other people join quite a bit, and they're a lot of fun to watch. They're hilarious. Jules puts up these recap videos that I highly, highly recommend. And if you're looking to play PUBG with some goofy guys and gals like regularly, it's a good time. Like, I don't play PUBG a lot, but I just love watching that stream because they're funny people. Who do I prefer more?
Yeah, who's your
pick? I can't proclaim. I love all my children equally. Not that you're my children, but
don't make it weird, James.
Maybe I'm your daddy. No. Rake OW.
James is my favorite game dad.
Oh, thanks, Bo. I guess my dad potentially could be my new favorite game dad.
I was actually thinking about this. I was like, favorite game character? I want James.
If you don't know, I like a while back after Far Cry 5 was recently announced, I think. It's set in Montana, which is where I'm from. And I joke, like, Wes just jokingly suggested I write like a funny letter to Ubisoft in the form of an article asking them to put my dad in the game. And I did that. And
then you went to see the game.
Yeah, I went to see the game at E3 and I was playing the demo and asking some questions and some Montana specific questions because I'm always curious. I'm like, I want to know if that, like, this thing is based on this beer brand. Only for my own satisfaction, really. And the guy's like, you should know a lot about this, or you have a lot of weird are you from Montana? He's like, I'm like, yeah. He's like, wait, are you from PC Gamer? I'm like, yeah. It's the dad guy. Hey, guys, it's the dad guy. And like, he's yelling at people across the room, oh, the dad guy. And it's definitely not confirmed. And like, I do not care if that guy is in the game, my dad's in the game or not. But they were like, we'll try our best. And maybe he will be. Maybe he won't be. Either way, funny, funny stuff. Back to questions. apropos of nothing, Rake OW says, I want a new Lego Island, and I just have to like sit here and agree.
Yeah. That game was like, I remember it being buggy beyond all belief.
It was a weird buggy, like, mess.
I thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
That was like one of the that island layout is like as nonsensical as it is almost like perfectly mapped in my mind. I could hop into that game and nowhere to go. And I don't know why. There's like a feature in me brewing at some point. I don't know what it'll be or what direction it will take, but I want to write about that level.
Yeah.
Or at least revisit that space in some way. Lego Island. Lego Island 2, not the same. Mm-hmm. Didn't do it for me. Also, I couldn't run it, so whatever. If you have more questions, JBJ Blaze is giving me more shit about the current topic. JBJ Blaze asks, ooh, good question. What's your take on Shadow of War's ranked mode and microtransactions both in that mode and single player? So, do you know anything about the multiplayer? I didn't read into that.
Yeah, I haven't read too much on it. I basically followed the Shadow of Wardor like announcements and the Nemesis stuff, but I haven't heard much about the microtransactions and multiplayer. Let me know.
I don't know. I can whip up the news real quick, but here's what I do know is that it's going to have loot chests, loot boxes.
Hmm.
And in the first game, you got loot and this is still applies to the second game, you got new loot like armor, weapons, yada, yada, for killing war chiefs.
Yeah.
And depending on how, I don't know if it was in the first game, but depending on how you killed them is determined what loot you got. So if you shoot them with a bow, You get a random roll at like a new bow. And I think depending on how powerful or high up in the hierarchy of orcdom they were, the more powerful your item was likely to be. So that seemed like a system that worked. But this time around, as is the trend with everything, I can't even find our news story. I know we wrote about it. But this time there will be loot boxes that you can purchase. And that will apply in both modes. How do I feel about that? How do you feel about that?
I feel not great about that.
It's hard to say until, like, my gut reaction is that. Like, why? The existing system seemed fine to me. If it's non-intrusive and if there's, you know, items that are locked in that system, I'll be angry then. Like, if you have to buy loot boxes or have to work towards loot boxes or whatever to get a random chance at this legendary kit or something, I'll be sad. That's a bummer. I don't anticipate this multiplayer mode being like a long-term hit or esport.
It sort of feels like something that it would be played like while the game is in vogue, but probably not. It feels sort of like the multiplayer mode of like Assassin's Creed or like BioShock 2 or something, where they had these multiplayer modes and people played them at the time and people were like, it's actually pretty good, guys. And then they didn't have the lasting power of actual multiplayer games.
I kind
of
miss that weird era. I don't know, like, was it like mid-2000s to like 2013 where every game had to have like a multiplayer mode bolted onto it. And some of them were really, like I said, BioShock 2's, I thought it was pretty cool, or at least like good.
I like weirdly and really enjoyed the Assassin's Creed one.
That especially.
It was like that weird assassin mode. You were like Templar training or something. And it had some surprising depth to the subtlety and strategy of pretending to be a computer character.
Yeah, there wasn't really anything else like that ever. And I kind of missed that. Obviously,
if you want a game that has a lot of that same stuff, the indie game Spy Party.
Yeah, is that very out, or is it still in like the infinite beta alpha phase?
I think it is in. I know for a fact it is in open beta at least.
You can pay like $20 or something.
Yeah, something like the equivalent of early access or something. Like one of the first feature stories about a video game that I ever wrote, like 5 or 6 years ago, was a story about Spy Party like entering open beta from closed beta.
Yeah.
And that was 5 or 6 years ago.
I remember.
And the game had been stewing for 5 or 6 years before that, even.
It's going to be designed to heck, but that's okay.
I think at this point it does have the new art style, which was a big changeover, and they had to like basically rebalance the entire game. But yeah, that game is very cool. It kind of built upon the idea of a reverse Turing test is the the idea, where rather than a computer trying to prove that it is a human, it is your objective almost is as a human to pretend to be a computer. Can you mimic AI control, because you are trying to blend in with other AI characters? And it's a really cool game.
Yeah, I've been wanting to play it for a long time, so maybe we can get a couple copies in the office and try it out finally. Yeah. Cool. I totally skipped over Varandeel's question. I'm sorry. And it's a good one. Are there any ideas you feel that are really underrepresented in gaming? For example, I want more games where you're unmistakably the bad guy in the story. And I mean, that's pretty open-ended. Yeah. Ideas that are underrepresented, but is there anything you in particular would like to see more of out there?
I think that's a pretty solid suggestion. I would like to see games where you're the bad guy, but outside of the like morality meter type games, because there are games where it's like you can play the good guy or you can play the bad guy, the like Fable, etc. Type thing. And I think that version of be the bad guy is kind of a little played out. I would like to see, I think that's the type of be the bad guy that I would want to see is like where you're much more of a conflicted bad guy, or like doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, or the wrong thing for the right reasons, mm-hmm. or being like a misguided evil, something like basically exploring the different types of evil.
Yeah,
I think are
tyranny gets, well, it's a kind of a ham-fisted approach to that, but mm-hmm. yeah, I like the idea of expressing,
yeah,
exploring that kind of morality,
because yeah, like you even had some of that in Fable 3 attempted to get into it. Mm-hmm. The like, you can either like pay the gold to do this or not, and if you don't, like, your people die, but it's kind of the handling of it was not great. But yeah, other genres, I'd like to see more. We sort of touched on this a little bit already, but I'd like to see more comedy games.
Yeah, it's hard to be funny in games.
It's really hard to, I mean, it's hard to be funny, period.
Yeah.
And there's actually a really great GDC talk from a couple years ago by Zoe Quinn, who's mm-hmm. making a comedy game mm-hmm. right now. And she makes a really great comparison to making comedy is a lot like making horror, in where you have to, in order to be genuinely funny or genuinely scary, like, you have to surprise people and you have to like give them an expectation of what it's going to be. Basically, you're making the comparison between a punchline is like a jump scare.
Yeah.
And if you know it's coming, it doesn't work. like, if you know the jump scare is going to happen, if you know the punchline of the joke, it's no longer scary. It's no longer funny. Or subverting that in some way where you show them the punchline and then subvert it or do something different with it, which that's something that I think Undertale did a really great job with.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, like, it's not easy. It's very difficult to do, but it's a... Yeah, I think I'd like to see more people attempt that.
I agree. I agree.
And maybe I haven't played this yet, but West of Loathing that just came out might be a really good.
Yeah, Chris did a preview on that like a week or two ago, and he's beaming about it. He says it's just been cheering him up.
Yeah, this is a game from the creators of Kingdom of Loathing, which is a kind of old school browser based pseudo MMO RPG kind of that had a lot of really quirky humor to it, and this is a single player thing but with that same like hand-drawn art style and goofy silly humor.
I think it's out very soon too.
I think it is either out now or just like
maybe tomorrow or sometime
or
soon. Yeah,
very soon.
I'm looking forward to that like super super hard.
What about you? What's the genre you are?
My answer is more, but like, I guess based on form, because I think comedy.
Do you feel like Dark Souls is underrepresented in games, and you need?
We need
more
Dark Souls games. No, we need fewer. But I think like Hellblade got me really thinking about this, and they deliberately, Ninja Theory, set out to. They use some industry jargon I'm not like a fan of, like AAA and yada yada, to quantify this, but they said we want to make a AAA game at half the scale with mm-hmm. an intense focus that's designed to be like 4 to 5 hours, and it's not going to have like systems on systems on systems and upgrade trees and yada. We're just going to like make this very good small thing, and it's going to do a few things super well. And I think like when I think of film, I think some of my favorite movies, or the ones that like stand out to me the most, are the ones that are like set in a single room and somehow make a compelling narrative last in that room, or you know, using a few well-written characters and very few tools to do something very well. And I want to see more games kind of deliberately shoot for that scale. And there's some that do. And I think like Tacoma is another one that got me mm-hmm. thinking about it. And I wish that there were just more of games with that kind of production value and that kind of attention to detail that I can sit down and play like in one or two sittings, and that don't try to be big genre epics that take you on a journey across the world. And you know, and we see those here and there. I want that to become, you know, something more than just the occasional That Game Company, like, game or Obzu, or I want to see every genre out there experiment with that kind of form.
Yeah, I agree. That's really cool.
Anyway.
It's a good thought.
Yeah. Like, imagine a Dark Souls, and it's 2 hours long, and... Yeah. Okay, I got to shut the fuck up. Other questions here I'm running through, but... Looks like... I think we're reaching the end of the question coffer. I'll scroll up real quick and see if there's any final good ones. James, what product do you use for your hair? I don't. I use my hands and go, ugh, all day, and it's annoying. Bo, do you have any questions about PC gaming you want me to answer?
What's a PC? How do I game? I don't know.
Well, that might be it, if there's nothing else for the PC Gamer Show this week. Oh, wait. DJ Bruce coming in with the just the perfect clincher, I'll say. Bo, we know what who you would want to be your dad in video games, but this is a great follow-up question. What's the best butt in video games?
Tub Geralt.
Oh, you don't even get to see it. You just know it's there. You know it's under there. Yeah, I mean, like, that's it. Tub Geralt. Mm-hmm. I guess Overwatch has good butts. A lot of good butts. Like, almost every character has a nicely modeled butt.
Winston.
Winston's butt is just...
Roadhog.
I go bananas for it. Okay. Well, I want to know...
bananas for Winston.
Thank you. Delayed reaction there. Damn it. We're going to let that question hang and simmer for a week, and we'll be back with a list of at least 20 of our top butts in order to start the show with. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But if you see any good butts, please DM Bo. Find him on Twitter. Use bombs wisely. Send Bo your favorite butts in PC gaming. He really wants to know that's what your true. Favorite butts are. He'll take them all. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us on the PC Gamer Show. If you want to join us live, and if you're watching on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast subscription service, we're here every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time on twitch.tv/PCGamer. So if you want to get a question in, you can either join our club at club.pcgamer.com and send it to me early. Harass me with your questions, please. Or you can, join us on Twitch and subscribe and ask it there, live. We have a lot of fun when we do it. If not, leave us a review wherever you're at. Leave some feedback. We always want to know what we can do better, what changes you want, what kind of segments you want to see. I'm toying around with this idea. I'm going to put it out in the world, and it's a scary one. How about this, Bo? Club members can call in during a hotline segment. What do you think about that?
Crazy.
I'm scared, but I want to do it. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next week.